You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM, streaming worldwide everywhere and anywhere at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be on stage hosting, for part of the date anyway, a great event called Prairie Magic Music Festival. It's at Sunset Hill Farm County Park. It's produced by the Parks Department. And we're going to have some great talents out there. Shamika Copeland, who has been on this show numerous times, the queen of Chicago blues. She's incredible. She's exploding everywhere. She's headlining. Also on the bill, Sarah Shook and the Disarmers, Jackie Venson, great blues ladies, and Crystal Bowersox. Now, Crystal is who we're going to be talking to. She was in town recently, hanging out at my record bin. She spent the day at the record bin with her son Tony and her pit bull Moses, who was quite a trip. I love that dog. They traveled together in a van, and she has been doing a one-woman show. It's like a girl and her two guitars, and she's eventually going to get the band thing going again once touring continues in a big way. But anyway, she's going to be a part of this lineup that's coming up at Prairie Magic. And again, that is at Sunset Hill Farm County Park, a great natural amphitheater. It's a big grassy knoll, and there's a whole different side where you park your cars, and they transport you with these little train carts and stuff. It's very cool. And bring your lawn chairs. There is no bleachers or anything. It's a natural pavilion, so there will be food trucks, bounce houses, a beer garden from Leroy's, and it's just going to be a good time. I encourage you to join me if you are into Americana female-driven blues rock. PorterCountyParks.org /prairie is where you can find information and ticket links. And this interview you're about to hear is actually an edited segments of a long interview we did. We did a live feed from the record bin through an internet program that I was hosting. And we took the excerpts of different things and dropped in some of her more recent songs. Her latest album, Hitchhiker, is not out yet, but we do have a special song that we'll play that she wrote a couple years ago that is kind of her new single. And it's going to be on Hitchhiker. It's never been released on an album. So we'll be hearing my chat from about 2-3 weeks ago with Crystal Bowersox when she was in Hobart, Indiana, hanging out with Blues Traveler when they were rehearsing and doing stuff in my store. So they were there for 3 days. She spent a day with us, and we ran tape and ran video. And what you're going to hear is some of that dialogue, some of that great conversation we had with a few songs dropped in to break it up. So I hope you'll enjoy it. You're going to be hearing songs from her last album, which is simply called Alive. It's a live concert album. Again, a girl and her guitar, kind of laid back. You'll hear a great treatment of a Joplin tune and a couple of her originals. So without any further ado, let's get you set up. Crystal Bowersox is our artist. You can follow her at crystalbowersox.com. That's crystalbowersox.com. She is a former finalist with American Idol Season 9. She came in second. And pay close attention to this because she's an artist that you definitely want to get to know. And that song we were talking about that is new from Hitchhiker, the new album, is called Courage to Be Kind. And there's a great story behind it. And without any further ado, let's take it away and give you some music from Crystal Bowersox.
The blonde brunette, he's smoking hash and hogs and Marlboro cigarettes. Outlaws and eggs in laws biting their tongues. He doesn't want a new wife. You still can't find the last one. You better leave him alone, girl. Don't even look him in the eye. Cause if you buy that ticket, you're gonna ride there. You can't judge a man by withered leather and chrome. Oh, I'm gonna ride along with him through the hot Mojave to strangers. Stay away from his type, and you gon' get it. You'll regret it for the rest of your life. If you buy that ticket, sat me down in his chair. I poured myself a glass of wine. I ran my hands through his hair. We got straight down to business. Oh, I couldn't get enough. He broke his word and blew my mind before that sun came up. Oh Lord, I hated the crime, but I loved every minute. Yeah, I bought that ticket. Somebody screaming bloody murder, trying to kick in the door. He threw me my boots and crazy eyes when he said, "She'll never take me alive, but you might be leaving here dead." Oh, when you buy that ticket. Oh, when you buy that ticket. Mama said don't, but I did it. Sing with me. It's easy. It just goes like this. You've heard it already. Ride that ride. And it comes around again. Ride that ride. All right, yeah. As loud as you want. Ride that ride. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ride that ride. Mama said,
vinyl shops in Nashville where you're living now?
We do. Yeah.
I know Grimey's is there.
Yep, Grimey's is there. There was Atomic. Actually, my buddy Dan was running that place. I think he closed prior to the pandemic, but Grimey's is great. Everybody's hanging out at Grimey's.
Are you still a vinyl fan? Are you putting your stuff out on vinyl still?
Absolutely. I put one of my albums out on vinyl, the Alive album, which I'll be leaving here. So, yep. And you know, vinyl is, it can be expensive. for the artist, if you're an independent artist, right. Which is why I hadn't done anything prior. It was my record through Sony. They said no to vinyl, and then the independent label said no to vinyl. And so I released my own record, and I said, we're doing vinyl.
Good for you.
I want to be one of the cool kids, you know?
That's right, because the cool kids do buy vinyl. Yeah. And what I like about vinyl is the fact that parents and kids are shopping together.
Mm-hmm.
The parents say, you know, I used to buy this for $3.69 at the local record store. And they're like, well, I'm buying it now for like $24.99 at the local record store. But you're right. The cost of it has gone up. I think the part of the reason is the petroleum aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the old timers got rid of the pressing plants. They thought, we're never going to do this again. Digital is here. Technology is here. Let's sell it for scrap metal.
Yeah.
And I think that happened to a lot of them. I know that happened in Terre Haute, Indiana, here where the big pressing plant for CBS used to be.
Wow. And it just goes away. And now all of a sudden we want it back.
We want it back. You know, everything comes full circle. You are from Ohio originally. You moved to Chicago and now you're in Nashville. Let's talk a little about the trajectory that brought you on this journey. When and why did you turn to music?
So I started taking piano lessons from the pastor's wife. My mom was the custodian at our Lutheran church growing up, and we got discount lessons. And I realized very quickly that a piano was a lot harder to carry than a guitar. So when I was around 10, I started picking up guitar. My mom had one laying around the house, and I learned all 10 songs off of Jewel's Pieces of You album.
Good album.
And I only knew those 10 songs. My mom used to take me to karaoke bars, and I'd sing that song Blue by Leanne Rimes, and everyone's, oh, she's going to be the next Leanne Rimes. And this lady approached and said, well, can you accompany yourself? And at the time I couldn't. So very quickly I figured out how to play those 10 songs, and then had a gig at a coffee shop, played them on repeat. And I made about $300 in tips.
Wow.
And I was like, wow.
That's addicting right there.
Yeah. At 10 years old, $300 in your hand is,
to sing.
Yeah. You're a millionaire at 10. So it wasn't about the money necessarily, but I was like, I could do this someday. And I just had it was cathartic for me. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a rough home. There was domestic violence and abuse and neglect and all sorts of things like that. So it was my way of coping and getting through. And just gave me hope, you know.
After learning the Jewel songs and tasting a little taste of success and enjoying that performance, when did you say, maybe I can write like Jewel? Maybe I should try and put some words out of my own.
So when I was really little, my mom she's prime country fan. So I was listening to Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood and all that stuff. I started rewriting lyrics for songs. I remember rewriting Pat Benatar's Hit Me With Your Best Shot. And I forget what I even wrote it about, but my mom had to tell me, no, honey, you didn't write that. That's a Pat Benatar song. I wrote a poem for my dad for Father's Day, and I put it to music. And I don't know. I just started writing to get the big feelings out and mm-hmm. to make some sense of them. So that's still what I do.
Now, when you listen back to some of the early things you did, is it cringeworthy, or do you still say, you know, I wasn't bad for a 10 or 12 year old?
It's not. My son's in the other room. He said it's cringe. I obviously was not a developed singer or writer mm-hmm. at 10 years old. But some of those songs, I don't know, maybe someday I'll pull them out and polish them a little and put them on an album. We'll see.
Wow. When did you come to Chicago? And I know you were in your late teens when that happened. What brought you to Chicago?
So I wanted to get out of Dodge. I grew up in a very rural area, Northwest Ohio, and there just wasn't a lot of opportunity there. So I picked Chicago because I could take the Amtrak train there. It was 4 hours away from home in case I needed to run home with my tail between my legs. And I didn't need a car to live there. So I went to Chicago. I also knew it had a rich history with blues music and that I could busk in the subways. And that's what I did. I ended up working at Kingston Mines Blues Club and busking in subways. One day I'd be down in the subway, and then the next I'd be opening for somebody at House of Blues. And then I'm back in the subway and just working all sorts of odd jobs and things.
That sounds very much like Jewel's journey.
I guess so.
You know, she was living in her van and sleeping where she could and making money as she could. And
yeah,
sounds like you had a little bit of the same journey.
Just had that drive to play music. I mean, my guitar was on my back. And I'd play for anyone who would listen. I was probably that annoying kid. Like, want to hear a song? Want to hear a song? Now people have to pay me for a song.
Very good. That's great. What did that kind of lifestyle bring to you as a person and as an artist? When you live that kind of hand-to-mouth lifestyle and you're sleeping in a subway or you're playing in a subway and you're crashing on someone's couch, at some point you have to say, am I doing the right thing? You know, and now that you have found you did the right thing, what did that kind of lifestyle bring to you as a writer, as an artist? What kind of visual did it give you of life in general?
So a whole lot. I mean, plenty of experiences. I've always been an observer of people and can read people decently well, I think. And just, you know, you encounter strangers and have, you know, strange conversations and end up in all sorts of predicaments and things like that. And it's just a wealth of material for songwriting. I think as well, just living with nothing teaches you how little you actually need. Mm-hmm. And I still, even though I'm not really living that way, I kind of miss it sometimes in the sense that, I don't like it when things go to waste. I live small. I don't need big extravagant things. I just never have felt a desire for, like, I don't need a Mercedes Benz. I don't need any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't need fancy. Never will. And I'm sticking to it.
I noticed that when you came in here, you were like, no frills at all.
Nope.
It's like cup of coffee and I'm good.
Yep. Cup of coffee. I'm good. And I got my one burner, propane camp stove that I made my coffee at this morning, and we stayed in some campground about an hour away from here, and we got everything we need in our van. That's it.
It's a healthy attitude, because, you know, they always say in the entertainment business, and nobody's on the rise forever. At some point, as long as you got your music, you don't have to have the Hyatt Regencies. You can live in a trailer and still be happy making your music.
Absolutely.
Happy. You don't get jaded.
Yeah. And happiness for me isn't about, I think I wrote a song called Gray Haired Rockstar when I was maybe 12, 13, because I was watching my local musicians play, and the joy I saw in them even playing, you know, what some would consider like a crappy little bar dive gig. It was the joy in the music. And that was always the most important thing, is that connection between artist and audience and what it does for the soul of a person, to hear the music, and for the artist, for the soul of the artist to be able to share that and present that to people, and to actually create something out of nothing that can change people's lives forever. That's the power of music. And that's where happiness comes from for me.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby Thorne would be so down just before it rained. He rode us all the way to New Orleans. Dirty red bandana, and I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Yeah, yeah. Windshield wipers were slapping time. I was holding Bobby's hand, and we sang every song that driver knew. Yeah, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Oh, nothing don't mean nothing. Good enough for me, good enough for me and my Bobby McGee. Yeah.
Did you have fun? Let me know.
trail to my soul. Through all kinds of weather, oh, and through everything we've done. Yeah, Bobby, baby, you held me from the whole world. More than one day up in near Salinas, Lord, I let him slip away. He's looking for that home, and I hope he finds it. Cause I'll trade all of my tomorrows for single yesterday, to be holding Bobby's body next to mine. Just another word for nothing left to lose. Oh, nothing. Well, that's all that Bobby gave me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you're feeling good, it was easy love. Bobby sang that blues. Well, feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
You moved from Ohio to Chicago. How long were you here? And you mentioned working in Kingston Mines and some of the blues haunts. You're going to be doing a show with some of the blues artists, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But how long were you in Chicago? And what did Chicago leave on your soul, so to speak?
Chicago, what a great place to grow up again. So I grew up in Northwest Ohio, but I grew up in Chicago. I was in Chicago from 03, 04 until on and off, because I did go home for a little bit and I came back until 2009. My son was born in January of 09, and I moved home and was living on my dad's living room floor. And then, you know, a friend of mine said Idol's in town, and I went, and things have worked out magically somehow. But Chicago has left a mark on my spirit in the sense that it gave me direction. Let's see if I can make this connection. So there's no east to Chicago. It's the lake, right?
Right.
You got north, south, and then west. And that analogy in my mind was just like, this is going to help establish the direction that I want to go in life. I hung out with people, you know, I guess street people is the way you would say. And I was a street person busking, and it taught me to not judge people based on anything other than their character. And just, you know, you got these people in suits who are, you know, big fancy cars and all this stuff. Sometimes those people were the most rotten.
Right. And sometimes they're nice.
Yeah. Sometimes they're nice, and money doesn't make somebody bad, but, the greed can, you know. But I just learned that, sometimes the kindest people were often those who had the least.
Okay.
And would still offer whatever it was that they did have, even if they had close to nothing. And that's just a beautiful thing about humanity, I think.
Is that where you got infected with the blues? Because you came from a rural background. You mentioned your mom was big in country,
yep.
And you were kind of weaned on country and folk with Jewel. You come to Chicago, you work at Kingston Mines, which is the hotbed of blues and always has been in Chicago. Now you're playing a show, Prairie Magic Music Festival, and that's August 14th, and you're going to be opening for Shamika Copeland, the designated queen of the blues, handed the throne from Coco Taylor's family.
Yes.
And she is the daughter of Johnny Copeland, and she is an alligator recording artist who's exploding right now, who also is making music with a social consciousness.
Yes.
So the pairing is unique to have you with that. Do you consider yourself a blues artist?
No, I don't consider myself a blues artist. There's definitely a whole lot of blues influence, but I don't consider myself a blues artist. But, you know, we all know that country music and all of our modern day music, everything stems from Black artists, Black mm-hmm. music, Black blues, like all that. And not to make it about race, but I just definitely don't feel like I can claim that and call that my own as much as there is an influence there. I don't know what I consider myself, actually. I write songs when they come to me, and some of them are very folky. Some of them are, you know, country. Some of those are however people want to box them up.
Okay.
Yeah.
You did mention Idol, and that's ancient history, but I do want to touch on that. You were in the 9th season of American Idol.
Yep.
What was that experience like? And I ask that because I've known folks that have been on there. Some say it was such an amazing thing that really helped them, and others say not so much.
Hmm.
What was your experience like as an American Idol? And where did you land in that? You were a finalist.
Yes, I came in second place.
Okay.
That experience was stressful. It was very strange. And also was one of the biggest blessings in my life. I tried out for the show to get stability for my son and I, and that is what I've achieved through that platform. So, you know, the Idol machine, it's, you're kind of a product that they push around, you know, go to this premiere, go here. And, you know, with my health, I have type 1 diabetes. I've had it since I was 6. It was a lot on my body. With the rigorous schedules and everything, but it was a boot camp. It was a boot camp for the business, and it opened all the doors for me. So I feel very, very blessed and when you do the math, the chances of me coming in second place on that show after however many people had auditioned is just mind blowing to me. So if there's a divine hand in it, which I believe there must be something, I'll take it.
Excellent. So you have been on your own now since. You got signed after that, though, didn't you?
I did. I went to Jive Records.
Okay.
And put out one album, my first album, Farmer's Daughter. And that one did okay. Some would say that it wasn't successful, but I would say 150,000 copies as opposed to, you know, selling 10 burnt CDs at a show is good. So I'm okay with that. So I released the first record, and then Jive had folded into RCA, and RCA then
the BMG.
Yeah. And they let the lesser artists go. If you're not Pink or Justin Timberlake, you had to get out. So I then was swimming for a little bit and went with Shaughnessy Records. And
no, that's Rita Marley's label, isn't it?
I believe so. I think
she had some records in Ziggy and some of the Marley.
Yeah. Shaughnessy is great. They do a lot of like re-release stuff and collect, they have collections of songs. And they were very kind to me. We put out a record, and I don't know if it was the right fit for me. So then I just kind of wanted to do my own thing, and I laugh at it, but it's Mama Socks Records now. Mama Socks.
I like that. So you have a single that's out now, and it's getting a lot of notoriety. It's Courage to Be Kind, which is a social commentary song written about a shooting tragedy. Tell us a little bit about that. And the uniqueness of this for those that are watching and the listeners is that you're not worried about the money with this. You want to get the message out.
Absolutely.
And it's a message that John Lennon would be proud of. It's about peace. It's about love. It's about forgiveness. There are tragedies going on throughout our world right now. Every day you turn the news on, somebody else is getting shot. Another car is getting carjacked. Another church is being bombed. Why did this song in particular, or this topic in particular, impact you enough to sit down and write a song? This is about the North Carolina church shootings.
Yeah. In a Charleston church, you know, what happened there was heinous and terrible. And the next day, the mother of one of the victims had come onto the news and said, you know, I forgive him. I forgive the killer. Through her tears, the most painful moment in any mother's life that you could possibly imagine. And she offered forgiveness to the person who harmed her child.
Wow.
And that was so powerful to me, because I don't know that I would have that kind of courage or strength to do that. You might have to lock me up. I'd be on a rampage. Like,
mothers are fierce.
Ooh.
And to be able to step back and look at it through a different perspective as she did, which was through her faith,
yeah,
and say, maybe they're in a better place. Maybe we'll meet again, whatever her thoughts were. But holding the hatred is only going to ruin what's left of their family's lives.
Right. Yeah. I mean, hate doesn't hurt the person that you hate. It only hurts the heart of the hater, you know? And I've understood that, I feel like, since I was a really little girl. So the song Courage to Be Kind really is about reaching across the aisle, finding that place of understanding, even if we don't agree, which, you know, it can be a really difficult thing with the climate, of everything, but just, I just pray for that, you know, in my own way, for that kind of understanding and peace and compassion to be the popular thing.
Right.
Instead of pointing fingers and screaming and yelling. And there's a lot of, here's the thing though, is that we say that there's tragedy happening everywhere all the time. It's getting a lot more airtime. It's something that the media is definitely, it's shock value. It's what people tend to want to hear about, which perpetuates more of these incidences too. And when you really get in, when you get in your van and you drive across this country, there is beauty everywhere. There are good people everywhere. And I truly believe that is the majority of human beings, that there's kindness everywhere. And if you're looking for it, you will find it. If you're looking for the other, you'll find that too.
synagogue in Texas. That building sits right next to another place of prayer beneath the crescent moon and star. Some coward burnt the whole place down. Don't you know that synagogue reached out? They said you're welcome here, come and worship as you are. It don't matter if there's 5 or 6 points on your star. It takes courage to be kind, to be brave enough to walk your love across a party line. This little light of yours and mine, it's time to let it shine. Time to find the courage to be kind. Some guy walked into a Charleston church, took out 9 people without a word. He was taught to hate them for the color of their skin. Next morning I was watching TV, and to this day I still can't believe the families forgave him for his sins. They said no matter what, love must always win. It takes courage to be kind, to be brave enough to walk your
traveling across America with your son, with your dog, and you do encounter people at campgrounds or wherever you stop that are willing to give you some, you know, some firewood or to sit down and talk or offer you a cup of coffee. Are those the people that you want to write about, the real people, the Samaritans, the people who share that vision that together as a unit we could make a better world?
Absolutely. The title track off of my forthcoming record, Hitchhiker, is a story about just that. I do a lot of driving. I went from Nashville to Seattle. It was a 4-day journey I did by myself. And somewhere in Utah, there was a man on the side of the road with a little cardboard sign. And, you know, all things in our society, what the media is sharing says, you know, don't pick this guy up. He's a serial killer. He's going to hurt you. I had that in the back of my mind, but listen to my dad. My dad always said, when you can lend a hand, lend it, and do your best, and no one is above or beneath anyone else. So I sized the guy up. I stopped. I gave him some water. He got in the van, and this man had incredible stories. He was maybe in his mid 60s or early 70s and said he had been a session drummer for Bob Seger at one point in his life, that he worked for NASCAR pit crew, that he had been on the Canadian Olympic hockey team. I don't know if any of this was true.
I was going to say, are you buying it all?
But I don't know. But he was so entertaining for the next 4 hours. I drove him as far as I could. And then he had said to me, he goes, wow, you look familiar. You look like that girl that was in that commercial with BB King a few years back. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And I pulled up the commercial on my phone and showed him. And he was like, oh, that's you. But, you know, this guy, I then pressed and asked him if there was anything in his life that he would change. And he really gave it good thought and said he would have trusted people more. And I said, well, why didn't you? And he said, because when he was a young man, he, about 12 years old, had gone into the foster care system, and that his family never came back for him. And once he aged out of the system, he then became transient and worked odd jobs and, you know, didn't have a place to belong. And ended up writing a song with my buddy David Lenning about this interaction with this hitchhiker. And I will probably never see this man again, but
if he's watching, this album's inspired by you.
It's all inspired by you, Daniel, if he's out there somewhere.
Wow.
But those are the kinds of things that happen. And I just feel like people are so afraid. If your choices are being made out of fear rather than love, then that's all you're going to get out of life. Mm-hmm. More fear. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just an idealist, but they might say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
Oh, I love that. Bring it all back to John. When is Hitchhiker coming out? And will the Courage to Be Kind song we were talking about, which is available now as an advanced single digitally, will that be on the physical copies?
Yes. So I don't have an exact date on when the album's coming out, but hopefully soon. I'm hoping by fall this year, 2021. Now,
it's been done a while, right?
It has been done. We finished in 2019.
So COVID was reaping its rewards, so to speak, and preventing it like so many other artists.
Yes. And okay. this record, I believe, is the best work so far of my life. And producer Billy Harvey, a good friend of mine, he would agree for him as well. We were really proud of this. John Ginty played keys, and he's with Almond Betts Band, and there's just so many great names, talent on this record, that when COVID hit, it was like, no, man, we can't just put this out there and not promote it. We can't not tour with this record. So I just sat on my butt for a year, and I wrote a whole nother album that I gotta go record now. But Hitchhiker's ready. It's ready to be out there.
And you're doing it on your own with mommy socks?
Mama socks. MAMASOX. I mean, it's just kind of a joke, but independent release. I don't know. My team is talking with a few labels to see if we can get some distribution, and whatever happens, happens. I don't know. If you haven't picked that up yet, then I'm just like, okay, it'll be okay.
You're out on the road now. You're doing a bunch of different appearances. You're going to be, here working on a video project with Blues Traveler. That's why you're in town. When is your tour starting? When are you going out and doing the music behind Hitchhiker and obviously your previous albums?
So I don't really follow the rules in this business. I kind of
rebel you.
I guess so. I'm just kind of perpetually touring. I play shows when I can. And
is you and a guitar?
Me and two guitars and my dog and my kid. And that's what we do. But you know, as soon as I have more information about the album and stuff like that, I will follow up with you.
Okay.
But right now I'm playing shows. It's singer-songwriter listening room stuff. And
are you playing some of the new material? Letting it work out a little bit?
Yes. And I know a lot of artists are like, you don't play the new material till it's released. Mm-hmm. But I do it the other way. I play the new material so I know what the audience wants and what fans like. And then I make the album. So the songs are already developed and well thought out. And maybe it's old to them, but my fans are amazing. They're so loyal, and they just have been so supportive for the past 11 years that I can't even believe it.
How many tracks on the new album?
There's 10 on the new album.
10?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. of the light, your soundtrack.